1 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call the March 16th, 2022 meeting of the Minnesota House of Representatives House Taxes Committee to order under House Rules 10.01. And a reminder to those who are watching here, on here, or you need information that we have as members, go to the website of the Minnesota House of Representatives. Go to committees and divisions, go to taxes committee, and on that homepage on the right-hand side are all of the materials. Ms. Griska, please take the roll.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Representative Marquardt present. Representative Lislegarde. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Davids present. Representative Akbaje.
Sorry, present.
Representative Agbaje present. Representative Carlson.
Present.
Representative Carlson present. Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative Detmer present. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo present.
Representative Garofalo present. Representative Gomez.
Gomez present.
Representative Gomez present. Representative Herr. Representative Hertas.
Hertas present.
Representative Hertas present. Representative Howard.
Howard present.
Representative Howard present. Representative McDonald.
McDonald present.
Representative McDonald present. Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Miller present. Representative Moran. Representative Mortensen. Representative Robbins. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandell present. Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Schultz present. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson present. Representative Swazinski.
Present.
Representative Swazinski present. Representative Joachim.
Present.
Representative Joachim present. We do have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. With that, Representative McDonald.
Yes, sir.
Would you please move the March 15th, 2022 minutes?
Hang on, let me lead. Yes, I'd like to move the March 15th, 2020 minutes.
Very good. Representative McDonald moves the March 15th, 2022 minutes of the Tax Committee. Any thoughts or comments or changes? Seeing none, I'm going to ask you to temporarily unmute yourself and call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The March 15th, 2022 minutes are approved. So, members, first of all, if you haven't gotten outside today, you need to get outside for a little bit of a walk. It's just beautiful up there, and I think spring is on the way. So the first bill up, and we have four bills today, but the first bill up is House File 11. Chair Schultz is bringing that, and I'll ask for a motion in just a second. But we're here to hear Section 9 of the bill, which deals with the tax portions of it. As usually is the case in the Tax Committee, we can talk about the bill overall, certainly, but we won't get too far into the weeds on that. Also, we're planning to, we need to take a vote because this is going to be, we refer to the Health Finance and Policy Committee. We'll have to take a vote, and that vote will occur no later than 1:40. And one of the big reasons for that is because we have several members here that also have bills up in Workforce and Business Development Committee. So we're moving back and forth. So we're going to get this, but this will be the only bill that will require a vote for today. So with that, Chair Schultz, would you, the motion is going to be to re-refer to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Would you like to make that motion?
So moved, Chair Marquardt.
Chair Schultz has made that motion. Madam Chair, please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt.
Section 9.
Yes, thank you, Chair Marquardt and members. This bill has been heard in multiple committees. Basically, it's a bill that allows people to purchase by paying the full premium into our very popular Minnesota Care program. We are very close to covering everybody in Minnesota, and we together can build something to do that. We have about I think there's about 4.5% of the population that is currently uninsured. This would ensure that we can cover everybody in the state. And this is the bridge of reinsurance. This is what's on the other side of that bridge. We can build a bridge with reinsurance to this buy-in option of the Minnesota Care Program. So Section 9 of the bill is what I'm going to focus on. And what this does, it provides tax credits to small business employers, those with 50 or fewer full-time equivalent employees. And it gives them a tax credit of 50% of their employee health insurance costs. And it does that temporarily until we can establish an option for small businesses to have what's called a shop or a public option for small businesses. So that's what the tax credit does. And I'm hearing a lot of support from small business owners. They're really struggling to provide coverage for their employees. And so this gives them an incentive to do so until we can get an affordable option, a permanent affordable option in place through the rest of the bill language. And Chair Marquardt, I think I have three testifiers that we could go to now.
Very good. And before we do that, as is my duty always, is to give the revenue estimate for the record. And so the revenue estimate for House File 11 is $224.7 million for 2023. For 2024, it's $765.5 million. And for fiscal year 2025, it's $562.4 million. So with that, let's go to testifiers. And first, I have Andrew Coplin, and then Stephen Reed is on deck. So Andrew Coplin.
Hi.
There you go. Would you please welcome to the committee and please introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Marquardt and members of the Taxes Committee. My name is Andrew Coplin, and I, along with my wife, co-own Coplin's Coffee, which is a coffee shop and roastery in St. Paul that I started in 2006. I am also a member of Main Street Alliance, a network of small business owners committed to creating strong communities, which are the true engine of small business growth. When COVID hit, to keep our employees and community safe, we closed our cafe and shifted to an online coffee roasting and delivery model, which we had hoped would be temporary. Now, over 2 years later, as we look to open our cafe and rehire staff, we are thinking hard about what constitutes a safe environment for our employees and community, not just in relationship to COVID, but to our overall health and well-being. A safe work environment in the food service industry, one that has been hit particularly hard during the pandemic, is one in which employees are paid a living wage along with earned sick and safe time and have access to health care. We have made progress in paying $15 an hour and providing sick and safe time at our business, but healthcare is the most unpredictable cost a small business can take on, and it's hard to afford anything that is actually good enough to be worth offering to our employees. As owners, we also experience this firsthand. We struggled to find affordable health insurance for our own family for several years and contemplated closing our business as the result of this drain on our own finances. Low revenue has allowed us to qualify for medical assistance, which is the first decent insurance we've had as self-employed adults. What we need is access to coverage we can grow with rather than a cliff between Minnesota Care and high deductible insurance. Now, more than ever, to make our community and business sustainable, all our employees must have access to healthcare. The Minnesota Care buy-in would be an ideal option for a business of our size to either allow our employees to enroll on their own without fear of losing eligibility, or to offer the kind of quality coverage for our employees that is just not affordable through the small group market. But until that is possible, the small business tax credit would help us be able to contribute to our employees' coverage through CORSHA plan. The availability of this tax credit would help us and businesses like ours to make the decision to grow again and to do so safely. Unlike large corporations that often find profit at the expense of the communities in which they are located, small businesses thrive because of strong communities. As a business that serves the public, we are invested in the health of our entire community, and we know that our ability to operate safely rests in the ability for the community to care for each other. We are all safer, and our public space thrives as each one of our neighbors has access to healthcare. Though not always as visible as roads and utilities, the infrastructure of care is just as essential for businesses to thrive. And as we witnessed over the last 2 years, it's crumbling. Now is the time to invest and build a better foundation. Please support HF11.
Thank you very much, Mr. Coplin. Stephen Reed is unable to join us today, so we're going to move to Ralph Bernstein. Ralph Bernstein. There you are. Well, welcome to the committee. Please state your name. Begin your testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Mark White and members of the Taxes Committee. My name is Ralph Bernstein. I own Downtown Dogs, a dog daycare and boarding center in the heart of Minneapolis. I appreciate that dogs may chime in here while I'm talking. I'm also a member of Main Street Alliance, an organization that works with small businesses like mine in advocating for small business and strong community investments. As a small business owner with 27 employees, I can tell you from experience that the small business tax credit outlined in HF 11 would be a tremendous benefit to small businesses like mine. I believe in creating good jobs that pay livable wages along with great benefits. I currently pay 75% of medical and dental premium costs for all of my employees, and yet I recently had an employee leave because they could not afford to pay for their health coverage, among other reasons. This is to say that they could not afford the 25% of the premium that I was asking them to pay. The small business tax credit outlined in the plan would cover up to 50% of the portion I contribute to the premiums, potentially allowing me to cover 100% of my employees' premiums and make health coverage more accessible to them. I could also potentially invest those savings in other areas of my business by offering higher wages or more benefits to my employees. That would boost employee morale and reduce overall anxiety around health coverage, which means my employees are less likely to come into work stressed. And while that is certainly important for all businesses, especially in my line of work, as dogs very easily pick up on my employee stress. Furthermore, being able to cover premiums with the tax credit would significantly boost my employee retention, saving me up to potentially $1,500 per employee in overtime and training costs. In a business like mine, employees leave to pursue employment with larger corporations that are able to offer them benefits that small businesses like mine cannot. High turnover rates do not mean financial losses, but they do not only mean financial losses, but they also create a lot of stress for the remaining employees. And we either have to incur further losses by accepting fewer dogs or risk an injury by not having enough staff members for the day. The tax credit would enable me to completely cover my employees' premiums or reinvest the savings in other areas of the business. As I've outlined above, it would also provide financial savings to me as a small business owner, but it doesn't end there. It's the safe thing to do, especially during the pandemic. It's also the right thing to do. It is good for business and good for Minnesota. Please support House File 11. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think your dogs were voicing their support for your testimony, Mr. Bernstein. So thank you. I want to mention that Representative Herr, Representative Lestigard, Representative Moran now in attendance. Next is Matt Dean. Representative Dean, former representative, welcome to the committee. When was the last time you were before a tax committee, Representative Dean? And please state your name and then you can answer that. We can't hear you.
Hear me now?
Yes, we can. Yes, thank you.
Sorry about that. My name is Matt Dean from the Heartland Institute. It's great to be with you, Chair Marquardt and members. And I also want to thank Chair Schultz for all of her work in trying to provide health care coverage to Minnesotans, not just on this bill, but on all other bills. And want to thank her for all of her hard work in doing that. I did send testimony to you and an email, just some issues regarding this bill so I can really just narrowly testify just to a narrow little part of this and get you on your way, not to take up too much committee time. The one thing I want to do, and it's probably not a surprise to many folks, is direct people to the Provider Tax and Healthcare Access Fund, which the Tax Committee is, of course, very involved with. And When you look at that, it's very important to say, how is Minnesota Care currently doing? How is it getting paid for? And currently, most of that is getting paid for, if you look at the attachment that I sent you, from federal funds within the BHP and the Healthcare Access Fund does not currently pay for that. But that's going to change. There is a spigot that currently has no bucket, and it will, the structural balance of the Healthcare Access Fund is actually going to go into negative moving forward. So that's something to keep an eye on as you continue your work ahead. Putting more strain on that, of course, will send that in the wrong direction. So as you look at the portions of the bill saying we're going to do premiums and we're going to pay for it in that way, currently, we pay about 4% of all healthcare access fund spend is from premiums. So about 96% of that is from taxes, just so you know. And also, just in terms of the collecting money and sending out premiums, how we're doing, the OLA, you got these for the last report for the healthcare access fund, found that we're almost 20% errors in determining whether people are eligible. You recall in 2018, there was $30 million in premiums that was sent out that we didn't bother to collect because it was too hard. So we need to do a much better job at that. And so I think that as we look at the Minnesota Care in terms of being an insurance company, it's not doing a very good job currently, and in the future, it needs to do a whole lot better before it expands greatly in this way. So those are some cautionary areas with regard to the bill. We would certainly encourage members to look at things like direct primary care and more flexibility and options for small business owners like Mr. Bernstein and others before vastly expanding this in uncharted territories in the future. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's all I have for you, and congratulations to you as well. And I just want to say thank you for all the work that you've done and for being nicer than you had any reason to be to me over the years. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Dean, and it was an honor to work with you also. Thank you so much. Before we go to, first of all, are there anyone that would like to testify that is on the virtual meeting right now that was not on the list on House File 11? Okay, if not, Chair Schultz, before we go to members' questions and comments, do you have any comments on or response to any of the testifiers?
Oh, I have a long response to former Representative Matt Dean, but it's not in the purview of this committee, so I will defer those comments to another committee or to the floor. I will just say that reinsurance is using part of the funds from the Healthcare Access Fund, and it also pays for our medical assistance or Medicaid coverage as well.
Very good. Thank you. Members, any questions on especially Section 9 of House File 11, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, can you hear me okay or not?
We can, yes.
Okay. Representative Schultz, is there any modification to Minnesota Care reimbursement rates in this bill?
Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and Representative Garofalo. The reimbursement rates are determined by the health plans who we contract to implement Minnesota Care and the providers. So they negotiate those reimbursement rates.
Representative Garofalo.
So Mr. Chairman and Representative Schultz, is there a current gap between those reimbursement rates? So in other words, if we have someone who's on private pay right now and they transition to a Minnesota Care policy, will those rates be the same or will they be lower?
Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and Representative Garofalo. Those reimbursement rates, I'm not privy to what those reimbursement rates are.
Okay.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Also, Representative Robbins is in attendance. Any other further comments or questions on House File 11? I don't see any. Chair Schultz, final comments before we vote on your motion.
Thank you, Chair Markwart. This provision that we'll be voting on in House File 11 will be very, very helpful to our small businesses, especially now in times where they really do want to provide coverage to their employees. They see the benefit of that. So I hope you all can support it, and then we can continue our discussions on how to get this across the finish line this session. Thank you, Chair Markwart.
Thank you very much. So Representative Schultz renews her motion to re-refer House File 11 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. And clerk will take the roll.
Representative Markwart.
Markwart, aye.
Representative Markwart, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Representative Lislegard, no.
Representative Lislegard, no. Representative Davids. Representative Agbaje.
Aye.
Representative Agbaje, yes. Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Carlson, aye. Representative Detmer.
No.
Representative Detmer, no. Representative Garofalo.
No.
Representative Garofalo, no. Representative Gomez.
Gomez, aye.
Representative Gomez, aye. Representative Herr. Representative Hertas.
Hertas, no.
Representative Hertas, no. Representative Howard.
Howard, aye.
Representative Howard, aye. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, no.
Representative McDonald, no. Representative Miller.
Miller, no.
Representative Miller, no. Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Moran, aye. Representative Mortensen. Excused. Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Robbins, no. Representative Sandell.
Sandell, aye.
Representative Sandell, aye. Representative Schultz.
Aye.
Representative Schultz, aye. Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson, aye. Representative Swazinski. Representative Joachim.
Aye.
Representative Joachim, aye. Representative Davids.
Representative Davids, no. No.
Representative Davids, no.
Representative Swazinski, no.
Representative Swazinski, no. Representative Herr.
Herr, yes.
Representative Herr, yes.
Ms. Griska, have all members had a chance to vote?
Yes. Okay. I've got 11 ayes and 9 nays, and Representative Mortensen is excused.
Okay. Thank you very much. So there'd be 11 ayes and 9 nays. The motion does prevail, and the bill is re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you very much, Chair Schultz. Thank you, members. Members, we're going to move to House File 3776. Is Chair Knorr there? Chair Knorr, welcome to the committee. We're switching committees. I'm sending all sorts of members back to your committee, and here you're in this one. So I appreciate you being able to work things out today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. So who would like to move House File 3776 to be laid over for possible inclusion?
I will, sir.
Representative Chair Joachim moves to lay over House File 3776 for possible inclusion into the omnibus report for the bill. Chair Knorr, to your bill, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a small bill that addresses a big need. This is House File 3776, which is Emergency Assistance for Post-Secondary Students. It's a matching grant program available to eligible institutions This program is administered by the Office of Higher Education. Members, this program is designed to meet the immediate needs of students facing food insecurity, housing insecurity, and basic needs insecurity. With that, members, for the section for the taxes here, this bill will allow the portion of EAPS, which is the Emergency Assistance for Post-Secondary Students, that is not used for qualified tuition and also related expenses as tax deductible, which means if they use for that portion for other things, you know, other than paying for the tuition, other related expenses, you know, there will be tax. So what we're making here is the grant that the students are receiving will be also be excluded. We know that the demand for this program is high. We're increasing the amount for this program up to 800,000. And this will help students facing financial insecurity. And I ask for your support, members.
Thank you very much, Chair Knorr. And the revenue estimate on 3776 is in fiscal year 2023, $10,000. And in both 24 and 25, in each of those years, $20,000. So, Chair Knorr, did you have any testifiers? I don't see anyone on the list. Okay.
No, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Is there anyone else on the virtual meeting that would like to testify on House File 3776? Okay. Members, questions? See none? Chair Knorr, closing comments.
Thank you, and I ask for your support, Mr. Chen, members. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. The chair will lay over House File 3776 for possible inclusion into the omnibus report. Thank you very much, Chair Knorr.
Thank you. I'll see you on the other side in the workforce. Thank you.
Yes, I'll be there shortly.
All right.
Next bill on the agenda is House File 4022. Representative Les Legard.
Chair, I make a motion to move 4022 to be included in the tax omnibus bill.
To be laid out. Very good. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill would authorize the City of Virginia to finance construction of a very needed public safety building with a loan from the United States Department of Ag. This bill would exempt bonds issued to finance the construction or to repay the loan from counting towards the city's debt. And with me, I have my friend, the mayor of Virginia, Larry Cuffey, here to testify.
Very good. Let's move to the mayor. So, Mayor Cuffey, welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 4022. As Representative Lindegaard indicated, that the City of Virginia, we're requesting an exemption from the net debt limit under the Minnesota Statute 475.53 Subdivision 1. It's related to the financing that is necessary to complete a new public safety building in the City of Virginia. The estimated project cost for this building is about $26.6 million. In 2019, the city generously received $9.5 million in grant through the state of Minnesota bonding bill. The balance of the project financing is approximately $17.1 million. Now, the city is applying to the United States Department of Agriculture Rural Development Program for a $17.1 million loan. The USDA is requiring a general obligation pledge from the city as security for this loan. The City of Virginia does have the authority under the charter, which is Section 7.9 of our city charter, to pledge its general obligation, providing the full faith and credit and taxing powers for any corporate purpose, which includes the public safety. Now, the USDA loan would be subject to the city's debt limit. So the statutory debt limit is 3%, of course, as you all know, from the city's estimated market value. Our market value, payable in 2021, was $382,603,000 times 3 which leaves with a debt opportunity of $11,478,099. The city currently has three bond issues with a total principal balance of about $405,000. So that leaves the city's remaining debt at $11,073,099. So the importance of this special legislation request is that the city of Virginia is limited by the statutory debt limit, which is presently $11 million. So in order to provide the financing to complete the sub-public safety project, the city needs special legislation to exempt us from the $17.1 million general obligation USDA loan from the statutory debt limit. And this is no cost to the state of Minnesota. This is something we need moving forward. So I appreciate your consideration. I stand for your questions.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mayor, for that testimony. So the revenue estimate shows there is no cost to the state on this. It's basically any bonds related to the construction project or repayment of loan would not count against the city's limit on net debt. So there's no state cost on that. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 4022? Not. Is there any questions for the author of the bill or Mayor Cuffey? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For a question for you or staff or Representative Listergaard, just wondering what other cities have been put in this position or currently are or have been that the legislature has passed legislation to help cities with a project like this?
Representative Listergaard, if you don't know, maybe staff might know.
Mr. Chair, I do not know that that answer.
Very good. Is there any staff member that would know that answer? Otherwise, we may have to get back. I don't see any hands being raised there. So, Mr. Cope or Ms. Schill?
Mr. Chair and members, we have not seen a request like this for the duration that I've been with the tax committee. So that's 15 years.
Very good. Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you. That's all. I just wanted to know, oftentimes we pass legislation that is isolated one incident, but we find out that we've done it in the past for other cities. So just was curious on that issue.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Appreciate that. Anyone else? If not, Representative Listergaard, any final words?
Just would ask everybody to support this. I know how hard the community has worked collectively with their different committees to bring this project forward. And, you know, the state of Minnesota, we had $9.5 million in bonding, and just I happened to be in the district last Friday, and I went and toured the current facility, and I just cannot stress the need. And this will help save the taxpayers at no cost to the city. I mean, no cost to the state, a significant amount. So I really appreciate your support, and I thank the mayor for coming and testifying on this critically needed project.
Thank you very much. The chair will lay over House File 4022 for possible inclusion into the omnibus report. Thank you, Representative Listergaard. Our final bill on the calendar for today, House File 3713, beginning farmer tax credit eligibility expanded. Representative Miller, would you like to move your bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. I ask that we move my House file. I just didn't bring the number up in front of me. The one you just said.
3713. Very good. So we have House File 37. Representative Miller moves House File 3713 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. Representative Miller, please proceed with your bill.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is a relatively straightforward and intended to be narrow bill. So when I was first elected, we started talking, maybe before that, but I know when I was first in, we were talking about how we can get, we have an aging farm community, and how we can get younger people involved. And over a couple of years, we established what ended up becoming the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit, which was really intended to incentivize giving opportunities. Out by me, it's primarily renting land to grow crops on, but there are some conditions in which people are purchasing, you know, livestock operations. That's something that came up recently. And so this bill was approved by the legislature, signed into law, and it's been implemented for a couple of years. It has a sunset, and I believe in about 3 years, at which time we'll review whether this was a good practice or not. And so with the intent of keeping this with beginning farmers, and for this committee, I won't go in detail, but there's a statute defined beginning farmer. It has to do with about $850,000 in assets, been a farmer for less than 10 years. They have to enroll in the ag business program at a local college. There's a couple of conditions that qualify you as an actual beginning farmer. It's a definition. And if you qualify under that, then you people that want to rent you land or these things, there can be a tax credit to which we've identified. And this program's been rolling for about a year or two now. Mr. Chair, you'd have to help me with that. I think we're into our second full year into this. And a small problem has arisen. Now, the intent of this is to keep this thing narrow to, like, if you will, I think the mental image is a younger farmer that's getting started in the business. People that are involved in agriculture know that can be sliced and diced a lot of ways. But there's a problem that arose with a couple people that came to me and said, beginning farmers, they qualify as beginning farmers, but they structured their business, their farm, as an LLC. And it was determined that they don't qualify for this tax credit. And so we went to the department and said, what do we need to know about this? And they came back with language very quickly and said that this will correct that. Now, I did go to Ms. Templin, and she gave me, I think this was sent to your committee. There's an updated fiscal cost to this. It was originally $600,000 and $700,000, which the credit for this is still there, but there's a management credit, which is also available to these, which add another $200,000 in 23 and 24. So it's a total fiscal year 23 of $800,000, fiscal year 24, $900,000. There is no fiscal impact in 25 because of that sunset. And then if Ms. Templin could confirm this for me, when I was talking with my staff, I believe that these monies are coming out of the funds that were already approved. There's about $19 million allocated towards this. And quite frankly, they aren't being utilized as much so far as what they thought. So there's room there. And I believe that what my bill will do will just go into that. So I guess what I'm saying is unless I'm understanding it incorrectly, Ms. Templin can correct me on this. I do believe that, if you will, the money is already sitting there. This is not new money that will be going coming off of the general fund. So I'll let her answer that in just 1 second. I just want to wrap up and just say that I really tried to keep this narrow. People that are in farming know that a lot of these farms are basically being created out of LLCs as opposed to sole proprietorships and what have you. So that's why we included it. So with that, I'll be done with my talking, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Miller. Ms. Templin, would you talk about the revenue estimate, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Miller. Yes, the revenue estimate for House File 3713, that members have is just slightly different from the estimate that you received. The Department of Revenue issued a revenue estimate that showed a revenue reduction in fiscal 23 of $700,000. And of that amount, $600,000 was for the credit and $100,000 was for the beginning farmer management credit. And the revenue reduction in fiscal 24 is just slightly higher at $1 million. In fiscal 24 was $700,000 of that amount being the incentive credit and $300,000 being the management credit. And the proposal in House File 3713 with the change to eligibility is an expansion. So the department scored this estimate as an additional general fund reduction. So to answer your question, Representative Miller, it would not come from the kind of the carryover or the unused credit that is remaining for these two credits.
Thank you, Ms. Kim. So anyone else would like to testify on House File 3713? If not, are there any questions or comments? Chair Joaquin.
Just briefly, so if I understand, Michelle, there is a cost from the general fund on this bill. And then also my question was, you mentioned there are other qualifications around the beginning farmer. Do the asset limits and all that still apply, and you're just changing the fact that they can apply if they're an LLC?
Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair and Representative Joaquin, that's a very good question to clarify this. That's a correct assumption. The beginning farmer qualifications do not change at all. All we're bringing into this is the narrow definition of an individual farmer LLC.
Chair Joaquin.
Thank you.
Very good. Anyone else? Very good. Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Miller, a few years ago, we passed similar legislation that would help young farmers pursue their dreams and their goals of starting up a farm. I had a constituent, as a good friend of the family's, that young man who just loved farming, worked on the farm his whole life, and wanted to start farming, but couldn't get any loans, no bank, of course, didn't have the assets. So I thought that the program that we passed a couple of years ago would be for him, but it really didn't help much. So there could be a couple of different circumstances that were involved. I'm not sure. I know he had great credit, came from a good family, was a hard worker, and was a successful farmer on helping out other farms in the area. How would your bill, particularly with this credit, really help young farmers secure land or a current farm, or inherit another family farm, or get credit from a bank for them to start up farming?
Yeah, and before Representative Miller answers, Representative Miller's bill is an expansion of the bill you're talking about, Representative McDonald. And
yes,
I would have that farmer talk to somebody, either from the Department of Revenue or Farm of Agriculture, or even House Research, about their situation as to why they didn't qualify. It might be because they may qualify still. There might have been something else, but that I think that would be good. Representative Miller.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McDonald, the chair has this pretty accurate. So the answer to your question of how this would apply to that young farmer you're talking about, this program specifically is incentivizing, as I said in the beginning, that the easiest way to explain this is we have lots of land to farm out here, and a lot of it is rented, but a new farmer can't find any land to rent. And they certainly can't afford to purchase that land. So this is just a way to incentivize having someone who has land to consider renting it to one of those beginning farmers. Now, the question as to qualifying for whether it be aid or loans or things like that, that would fall. We do have programs under what's called the AGRI, A-G-R-I program in the Department of Agriculture. There are some funds there. There are some loan programs there. There is, I don't know exactly how the RFA loan program would work specifically in his circumstance, but that is sort of like an augmented loan on top of what a bank would loan to someone. He may qualify for that. So really the direct answer to someone like that, I would say, is, you know, I'd certainly be willing to kind of direct them to the resources that are available to them. But I know that the Department of Agriculture and also the ag business programs in the colleges would certainly be able to direct him. So if there's a local community college that's, which I assume there is, because there's several of them in the state, that program would be able, they would encourage them to take that class because it helps with stuff like this, and they would certainly direct them to that. But the bill that I'm referring to specifically is a tax credit to the landowner or to someone who's selling an asset, you know, business basically. So specific to him, he would only qualify in the sense that someone would want to do business with him for this bill.
Representative McDonald.
That's good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Miller.
Thank you. Representative Miller, final comments.
I appreciate the committee's attention to this. This was just a problem that cropped up with an existing program. And we think this is a reasonable fix. So I hope that we can include it when we have a final bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Miller. The chair will lay over House File 3713 for possible consideration into the omnibus bill. So, well, thank you, members. Tomorrow we've got local government construction sales tax refunds, six or seven bills, and that's what we will do tomorrow. So until then, members, we are adjourned.